Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Julius Caesar. And don't worry, I promise I'm not Brutus. And today, we have a very fun episode for you all. We're going to start out by talking through our thoughts on Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis before diving into a few of our favorite folk horror movies. Before we start yapping, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hey, everyone. Heath Ledger here. I'm happy to announce that the next version of the Blast Movie app is officially in development. Expect a big overhaul of everything theater related. We have some big collaborations coming up in 2025 that we are so excited to tell you about when the time is right. Until then, thank you for all your constant support and stay tuned.
All right, Ty. Do you mind if I go first for the ticket of the week this week?
Sure.
Because this is one where I actually had to nominate myself.
Lame. So lame.
I'm sorry, but I had one of the greatest blast experiences of all time. And since we don't do a what we watched, I had to find a way to talk about this movie. Usually with movies lately, I've just been tossing away the tickets because we have Blast. So like I'll remember it through Blast. This one I can't toss. This is Batman Mask of the Phantasm in its glorious state in theaters. It is one of the greatest theater watches I've ever had. And let me pull up my ticket real quick because I feel like I took more away from this than I ever have before. It might actually break into my pinned tickets on Blast.
Whoa.
Yeah. What
tickets do you have pinned?
The Thing from Normal Theater, which is another like all-time theater watch, and TASM 2. TASM 2 is always going to be there.
I have Across the Spider-Verse and Wildcat.
Nice. Nice. Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which, by the way, I encourage you, I know you didn't get to see this in theaters, look through the posters on there. They are all fucking sick. This is the one I chose for my ticket. I know it's so like good. Super low quality on camera, but I said, I've never been a big believer in destiny. The idea that our choices don't matter in the grand scheme of things has always been scarier than reassuring to me. But maybe destiny isn't about certain events that are meant to happen in our lives. Maybe destiny dictates the emotions that we feel throughout our lives. No matter what, Batman will always feel guilty. He'll always feel a responsibility to his parents and to Gotham. He'll always feel alone because he has to be. We all have certain emotions that stick around since childhood. No matter what we do, we can't get rid of them. That's what Mask of the Phantasm captures, and that's why it is, and likely always will be, the greatest Batman movie of all time. AA+.
What's your favorite Blast moment from this movie?
Kneeling at the parents' grave and saying, I didn't count on being happy.
So good. I would argue him putting on the cowl in front of Alfred for the first time is like goosebump inducing.
That's the other one that jumped to mind for me when Alfred's like, oh my.
Top three Batman movies?
Phantasm, Batman versus Superman, and DKR.
DKR, The Batman, Dark Knight Returns, Part 1.
Cool. That's a great list.
I think animated Batman... Every form of Batman has been great. Animated, Lego, I count as separate, and live action we've gotten great renditions pretty much top to bottom.
Hey, honorable mention, Batman the Doom That Came to Gotham, which is like a Lovecraftian Batman movie, is so sick.
Scooby-Doo with Batman and Robin, also great. Like, it works in all forms.
Yeah, dude, it does.
All right, ticket of the week for me. Nice pivot from Batman. Transformers 1, a movie that I got a chance to see. But Goose, Christian Guzek, he got ticket of the week. He saw it on September 26th. And his ticket reads, "We were brothers once. Megatron. Once. Optimus Prime." This movie was very fun to watch and a great refresh into the Transformers universe. I thought my Thursday was ruined completely with Devin Singletary giving me a disaster class performance in fantasy, but this definitely brightened my mood. I totally recommend this movie to anyone that wants a laugh, something new, and most importantly, to have fun. Blast grade A-, movie grade B. This movie's a lot of fun, and whether you like it or not, it's easy to acknowledge that it puts a smile on your face if you've ever enjoyed a Transformers project in the past.
I agree. And from what I've seen in the tickets or the Letterboxd reviews and tickets on Blast, seems like most people agree with me that this is far and away the best Transformers movie of all time.
TikTok would disagree with you. I feel like producer Jack put out that clip of Transformers 1 versus 07. And the comments were back and forth between 1 and 07. But a lot of the comments, majority of the comments, were talking like OG OG. Like the 80s Transformers is still peak.
That's a more respectable take than 07.
All right, well, something tells me neither one of us has watched that. So
yeah,
let's pump the brakes.
All right, let's get into Megalopolis here. Do you want to talk me through your Blast ticket?
So I really hope producer Jack, when he puts this in a clip, shows the Snapchat I took before the movie. I'm trying to pull it up for you to give some kind of indication. Because it does paint a nice picture. But I was walking into Kendall 11 and I took a selfie for my ticket. Let's see if I have it. There we go. I don't know if you're able to see this or not, but not a happy camper walking into the theater. And I can say with confidence that my face was about the same leaving the theater. So my ticket reads, "For the first time in my entire life, I turned my phone on during a movie to check the time. I couldn't wait to get out of there. This pic was before I walked into the theater, and I had about the same face for the entire runtime. Blast grade D-, movie grade D-. I thought this movie sucked. I thought it was really boring, waste of time. I'm sure it deserves a rewatch, but it's not going to come from me."
I think it's interesting, but I mostly agree with you on this. I want to start this discussion of Megalopolis actually with a brief history of the movie. And this is all like pretty loosely paraphrased from Wikipedia, just so you guys know. So in 1977, Star Wars year, house year, Francis Ford Coppola comes up with the idea for Megalopolis. That is absurd that's how long this movie's taken to make. 1983, he makes some notes to start writing a screenplay on it. 1989, he starts to prepare to film it, but he ends up pushing it off because he had so many box office flops that he had to pay off debts for. So he prioritizes some other projects first. 2001, right around 9/11, he gets some actors for a table read of this one. Then he decides, "I'm sick of this fucking studio system. I'm funding this myself." 2019, he gets back around to this movie. 2021, to fund it himself, he sells some of his winery. What a waste. And 2023, filming's underway. Reports have it that Coppola lets actors write scenes as they're happening. And he's making changes whenever he fucking wants to. As a result, the art department and visual effects team just quit. And of course, 2024, the big controversy, Megalopolis gets a trailer put out that has fake quotes from reviews.
Did Francis Ford Coppola set back creative control by like 10 years with Megalopolis?
Maybe. I saw that like some theaters had a live performance part of this.
I can assure you ours did not.
Apparently, so in his original concepts for this, he wanted really bad to, like, from what I understand, have like pre-scripted questions and answers for the audience to interact with. The movie, like halfway through, the movie would just pause, like the whole Adam Driver pause time thing. And then like audience members would like get a microphone and be like, how do you feel right now? And then Adam Driver would have a pre-recorded response to that, and some like AI tech would recognize what the audience member said and have that like clip pull up and Adam Driver say like, oh, well, right now I just really want to make Megalopolis or something.
See, my frustration with this movie is that I feel like the people that like it because it's different. I'm not convinced that different always means good. This movie does feel different. It feels like it doesn't feel like anything that's coming out, and I'm not so sure it's in a good way.
I mean, yeah, it's the same people who said that Killers of the Flower Moon was like the best movie last year. It's people who are stuck living in the past, attached to these 80-year-old guy directors who just have lost it a little bit. They've lost some of their touch.
I feel like this doesn't even come close to Killers. And I know
I agree. Maybe a bad comp, but I don't understand. Like, a lot of the reviews I've seen on this are like, oh, this is the last movie of its kind. Like, truly the like a visionary that's come to an end. Shut up. Like, James Cameron envisioned Avatar when he was like 11 years old and made it in less time than Francis Ford made this. And I don't even think he really knows what it's about.
I don't know what it's about. I had a really hard time with this movie.
So in that Wikipedia article I was reading, they had some quotes from Francis Ford on the themes of this film. This is what they had. Quote, in many ways, what it's really about is a metaphor, because if you walk around New York and look around, you could make Rome there.
Oh, Frank.
Also, ultimately, what's at stake is the future, because it takes the premise that the future, the shape of things to come, is being determined today by the interests that are vying for control. We already know what happened to Rome. Rome became a fascist empire. Is that what we're going to become? And lastly, the problem is that the people in power don't want it to be that, and that is a city where the priorities are all positive. Because today, they gain their power from hatred, disagreement, and conflict. When you talk about the Middle East, the people today, they don't want peace. The people on top, they like it the way it is.
I mean, I guess I kind of understand. Like, I'm guessing he's talking about Giancarlo Esposito's character as the mayor, like wanting things to stay the same.
I think that he like took a bong rip in the 70s and like realized that like politicians lie to us sometimes. Like, that's what I'm getting from this.
I mean, yeah. And you read these, can you map out how he conveys this through a 2-hour and 18-minute movie? I really can't. I think he struggled to drive his themes home.
He definitely did. And I think it's probably because, I mean, this movie takes 50 years to make, and there are a lot of conflicting ideas that he probably has in those 50 years. Like, I don't have the same beliefs I did 4 years ago. So, like, how is he going to age through this time and, like, be writing or constructing this movie the whole way? It makes no sense.
I wonder what President Esposito was based off of and who Driver was based off of. And then 40 years later, he's like, oh, fuck, I got to change things.
I actually do. They had note on that. I think Driver is supposed to be based on some like industrial engineer who like has a passion for urban planning. He was famous. And then Esposito's character is based on a character from Ayn Rand, who wrote a super like famous philosophical fiction book about like the political climate and how kind of hopeless things are. I think it's called Atlas Shrugged.
Well, I will tell you, I think Adam Driver as an actor is basically Justin Herbert at this point. I can't understand this guy. Like, 5 years ago, he was regarded as like a top three acting talent working today, the next big thing, and then makes 65, House of Gucci, Ferrari, and now Megalopolis. It's kind of like the Chargers rosters the last like 2-3 years. It's hurt his stock. I don't know what happens to Driver for the next 5 years.
I honestly don't either. I'm glad I don't have stock in him in our little stock market game we have going, because it seems like he's kind of lost his touch. I don't know if he's selling out or just like wanting to work with certain directors. Like, But I mean, the rest of this cast of the movie feels like they're on a different plane than Adam Driver.
Like, what do you mean by that?
Like, if you think of premier movie actors, Adam Driver probably enters the conversation somewhere around the top, like 15. Aubrey Plaza and like Giancarlo Esposito and John Voight in his like 90s now or something, they're probably in like the top 150 convo.
What about Dustin Hoffman?
Oh, God. And Adrian from Rocky.
I honestly thought she was dead. I mean, I did too. I feel terrible. But I was like, is that Adrian?
Why'd they kill her off in Creed?
poor Rock.
Yeah, for real. This whole cast was weird. Shia LaBeouf, too, who I thought was, like, canceled for, like, some real, like, domestic abuse stuff.
I mean, he's made his comeback the last, like, okay. 4 years. Honey Boy, Peanut Butter Falcon. Gotcha. So, like, I mean, he's back in the mix, but, like, still, like, the cast is... I see what you're saying. Like, there's Adam Driver, like, tier one, maybe, like, tier 1B, and then the rest of the squad.
And then Gus from Breaking Bad. Like, it just... it makes no sense to me. And as far as themes go in this, my biggest takeaway, did you have one really?
I guess like art can never be, it shouldn't be harnessed. Like, I honestly don't know. Like, I really struggle with the themes and what this was trying to convey.
The only thing that I can really find in this, I think you're like onto something maybe with what he was trying to say. The only thing I could take away was that like ambition is going to save us when we're in a time of crisis. Like, but the ambition in this movie is completely blind and like not driven for the right reasons, it feels like. And it's interesting because on Friday I had some downtime at work. And what do you think I do with downtime? I start listening to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh, interesting. That's a way to spend your Friday.
Yeah. And it's actually very beautifully written. I am glad I didn't read it in high school because I think I would have hated it back then. But now I really enjoy it. And the main takeaway I've gotten from that so far is to not let ambition blind you, because it's like just a pathway to suffering and not actually like have your goals in mind. Like, what are you trying to actually do with your gifts? And I feel like it's two very conflicting themes. And I'm going to side more with Mary Shelley here, because her writing in that makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably mapped out a lot better. I think it's clear. Adam Driver's character wants to build this utopia and believes that he can do it through, I don't know, his megalon material and create this perfect society for all to thrive. Like, it's mapped out, but there are like almost no consequences to that. He gets shot in the eyeball. Someone in my theater laughed during that scene when they reveal his like golden eye.
I can't blame him. You mentioned earlier that, like, I mean, I feel like this movie is hard to talk about because there's so much going on and I feel like most of it just means nothing. And so when I was watching it, I was wondering, like, is this worth a rewatch? And at the end of the day, I think no. I think that the themes that Coppola, like, really tries to dig at are pretty just basic and, like, overdone by now. Maybe in the 70s they're a little better. So my question to you is, what would you rather rewatch than Megalopolis?
Napoleon.
Oh, that's disgusting. I'll tell you what I did. So last night I really did not want to see this movie, and we got home, we had done a long day of shopping with Morgan's sister for her homecoming, and we got back and I was like, you know what, I saw this on Tubi today, let's watch Terrifier.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah, so that's my answer. I would rather watch Terrifier than rewatch this movie.
There are a lot of things I'd rather watch. Maybe like an entire four-quarter disaster class from Deshaun Watson.
Jesus Christ. That's pushing it.
It is. It is. But this movie is quite the snooze fest. It's the first time I wanted to walk out of a theater. And if we weren't doing this pod, I was out. Like, about 40 minutes in, I was ready to go. And I think at, like, the hour 45 mark is when I powered on my phone just to check the time. Like, oh, my gosh, please. Please get me out of here.
That's the other thing. This movie is long.
It's a long 2 hours and 20 minutes. Long.
And the worst part is it probably needs like another 2 hours and 20 minutes to make any fucking sense.
Probably. See, we need Ridley Scott to come in and do the Napoleon version of this. Just really flesh it out, really make it boring.
Jesus Christ, man. I can't imagine a less fun movie watch heading into like the spooky season right now, because we are it's fall officially and we're gearing up for Halloween. It's time to watch some scary movies. And before we dive into that part of this episode, I gotta ask, while I was watching this, I think there's a legitimate case to be made that Sophia is a better director than Francis Ford.
Make the case, because I'm not convinced.
I think that Lost in Trans... Okay, well, you and I aren't in the Godfather generation, obviously.
Yeah.
I think Lost in Translation has much better peaks than The Godfather Part 1 and 2. I think Apocalypse Now is probably Francis Ford's best movie, but Virgin Suicides from Sophia, I think, outdoes that.
I think if you're looking at like popular consensus, the two Godfathers, Apocalypse Now and The Outsiders, is a better peak, like peak of their powers, than Virgin Suicides, Lost in Translation, and maybe like Priscilla. I don't know. She's good. I don't know if we're at FFC territory.
This is my egregious take of the episode. I would rather rewatch On the Rocks starring Bill Murray and Rashida Jones than rewatch The Godfather.
Oh, you know, we can't even be talking about this. We're not Godfather truthers. Would you rather watch Godfather or Megalopolis?
Oof. Is Apocalypse Now on the table?
No, it's
not. I actually do truly believe Apocalypse Now is by far the best Francis Ford Coppola movie. And maybe that's because I'm partial to Heart of Darkness, the source material for that. But I think the adaptation of that into the Vietnam War is like genuinely genius and does a lot more than The Godfather does for me.
Both parts?
Yes.
Very cool. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of done talking about the past here. You know, we've got a great slate of folk horror movies that I hadn't seen before, at least two of them. So I want to thank you before we jump into these. I had an absolute blast watching this slate of movies this week.
Dude, they are so good. And I am excited for the question you're going to ask later on in this pod, because I think there's a genuine discussion to be have about it. But let's talk first about The Ritual. This was our popular pick because when I think of folk horror, I think of people in the woods and cults and monsters and stuff like that. And it's hard to do that much better than this Netflix original movie from 2016, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was 2017. But either way, I feel like it's been a point of conversation since its release and is talked about every single October. I had never seen it, plopped it in last night to tune in. It is phenomenal. It is absolutely phenomenal. It has the ability, I guess, drives home the point of movies can be more. It starts with this like immediate tragedy and then jumps into the meat and potatoes of the actual like scary stuff. I think it's great. I think it's absolutely great.
That immediate tragedy is one of my favorite openings in any horror movie. What would you have done in that situation? Would you have tried to intervene or no?
That's what I love about this movie. I think the point is like you never know until you're in the moment. Like his friends were dogging him, though, you know, in the second half of the or second act of the movie, and then when the chips are down and they're in the same situation, could they step up? No. I don't know. I'd love to say that I want to be there for my friend, but how can you decide that without being in the situation?
I think Christopher Nolan said it best in Tenet. Everybody wants to say they'd run into the burning building, but you can never know until you feel that heat.
Thanks. Thanks, Chris. Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
I do really love that aspect of this movie. My first watch was actually on recommendation from my friend. This is, I think, his favorite movie of all time, which is like an offbeat take, but also a really good one. And he actually got a tattoo of this movie. And for the rest of the horror movies on today's slate, I want to talk about what the best tattoo you could get from that movie is. I'm going to send you a picture of this tat right now. And Jack, I'll send that to you as well if you end up clipping this, because it's pretty wild.
Oh my gosh. I mean, if you're doing a tattoo from this movie, it's got to be the creature.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about as sick as it gets.
Yeah, it's a cool one.
It's also haunting.
Yeah. The creature itself is, I think, really well designed in this movie. Something that probably isn't talked about very much for it. Like, it is a menacing figure, and I like that we don't really know, like, all of its powers, all of its lore or anything. We're just thrust into that situation of these people who are stuck with it.
Less is more, and this movie is the captain of less is more. You don't really get to see this creature until the very end of the movie, and when you do, it's a great mix of CGI wide shots and tight shots with practical effects. They do a great job interweaving to keep that realism, make you believe this thing is actually a creature mowing you down.
Yes, they do. And I gotta say, like, I we're singing its praises right now. Do you think this is a top five Netflix movie of all time?
I think it has to be. It has to be. I think it's one of my favorite folk horror movies. This is really incredible. Like, if the cast looked different, or if this was an American movie, I would have been convinced Flanagan made it.
Interesting. I think that's actually a really good take.
It's got that archetype. It's got, like, the human tragedy, the breakdown of character. I think this movie's really good. So, in short, yes, it is a top five Netflix movie.
It just breaks my top five. Mine is All Quiet on the Western Front, Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Da 5 Bloods, Marriage Story, and Ritual comes in, and that's in no particular order. But I think that, I mean, Netflix has made a lot of great movies over the years. I don't know if you remember some of these, but, like, that is putting it over things like, let's see here, Beasts of No Nation, Dolemite, Don't Look Up, Glass Onion, yeah, I'm not mentioning Hustle, The Irishman. Like, there are a lot of great Netflix films, Mank not included, that we probably should give flowers to.
All right, question for you, because it is kind of a Netflix movie. I don't think it's a Netflix original. Would you rather The Ritual or Hush?
Ritual.
I agree. I think this movie is really good. I think it's really, really good. In the third act, it starts to make a pivot towards, like, the involvement of other threats beyond the creature, and I thought it was going to go off the rails, and it doesn't. It knows exactly what it wants to do, and it stays in its pocket for the entire 90-minute runtime. This is a great fastball.
I love it so much, and like you said, horror can be more. There are a lot of pretty intense themes about forgiving yourself and grief in this movie that I think hit home really hard. Like, if you guys haven't watched this, we've done a pretty good job of keeping this spoiler free. You should go and check it out, like, immediately, this October especially.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And to your point, I think it does a great job of teaching people to face their demons or face the lowest points of their life literally in the face. It's really well done. I think this is one of the better, like, scary movie endings maybe ever. I think I really like this movie.
So one of the things I do really like about this movie too is that the characters are pretty smart. I think that they act pretty pretty logically and stuff. But I got to say, like, what would you do if you were in the situation where you're stuck in the woods, you sleep in the shack, and like your buddy wakes up marked with like a pentagram type thing. There are runes all over the trees outside. Somebody was like sleep praying to some like demon thing. Like, what are you doing in that situation?
So the characters have to make two decisions in the movie. It's either we go back the way we came and it's like an extra 2-3 day trip, or we take the shortcut through the forest and get out of here as quick as possible. I think you got to go through the forest. Like, it's already fucked up. Most of the characters don't realize that there's a creature out there. It's just like they walked into some psycho shack. Now it's time to leave. I think I would take the shortcut. You've got a guy on a bad knee. I think it's the most logical approach.
That guy on the bad knee sucks too. I hated him.
Dude, that moment where he calls out Luke for not doing anything in the convenience store made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah. Me too. All right. Do you have anything else to say about the ritual? I just feel like it's so good and people need to watch it.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but shout out Hatch. Really like the side character in this movie.
Nice, nice. On to Midsommar, your selection for this week's thing. And honestly, my least favorite of these movies, surprisingly.
I think so. There's an asterisk on this pick because you wouldn't let me pick Hereditary, my actual favorite, because we've talked about it ad nauseum on this pod. So
that is true, yes, and I apologize for that. Initial watch of Midsommar, talk me through it.
So I had seen Hereditary with my high school girlfriend, and we didn't even talk on the car ride home. She was so pissed at me that I put her through that. It was a nightmare, but she was nice enough 2 years later to revisit, or maybe it was a year later, to revisit Midsommar. Same director, same scare, same concept. And we thugged it out. We went together, and I think we were both better prepared. We went to AMC Naperville, and full theater. Like, I forgot what Ari Aster could do for a movie. I mean, the screen was packed, but I just remember being sick to my stomach and uncomfortable and anxious for 2 hours. This is the scariest movie to not have any dark scenes. Basically, it takes place completely during the day. Florence Pugh's just like scream crying for 2 hours. There's some weird rituals going on. Some just gnarly, gnarly, uncomfortable death scenes. This movie's just uncomfy.
Yes, and that actually brings me back. So my first watch was on my birthday. And I went to see this with my good friend Lem, who you are now acquainted with. And we told my parents, like, yeah, we're going to go see Midsommar. It was my 17th birthday, so the first movie I could officially see, like, alone, without sneaking in. And my dad was like, oh, I've heard, like, so many great things about this. I want to come with.
Oh, boy.
And we didn't know, so we were like, yeah, sure, come on.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I mean, the scene, the barn scene is what stands out. And I looked over and my dad was just pretending to be asleep, which is like the funniest and probably best way to deal with that situation. But one of the most uncomfortable theater watches of all time. We got back home and Lem was saying that he hated it. It was like a 2 out of 10. I was saying it was like a 9 or a 10 out of 10 because horror movies, in my opinion, are supposed to make you feel like really uncomfortable and like just weirded out, I guess. And I think this does a great job of doing that, and a better job, in my opinion, than Hereditary. But I want to hear your thoughts on Midsommar versus Hereditary.
I think Hereditary is just, in my opinion, a more appealing movie. Like, if I'm going to be anxious and uncomfortable, I want to actually enjoy my time. Like, I like the slow, methodical breakdown of this family in Hereditary, whereas in Midsommar, you get an immediate tragedy in the opening scene, and then just a really, there's no other way to frame it, bizarre performance from Florence Pugh. I'm not convinced it's hard for me. Like, is it a good performance because she's so uncomfortable and honestly frustrating, or is it way too over the top? I can't tell, but that is the difference maker between Hereditary and Midsommar for me.
Interesting. Okay. They're closer than I thought then for you. I would have thought that you didn't like this like as much at all. But for me, Midsommar takes the spot over Hereditary because I love the things that are done in the daylight. I think that that's what makes this movie stand out for me. Hereditary, obviously, you know, like didn't really hit home for me. Isn't one of my favorites. And I've never seen a horror movie do things during the daylight that this does. And I vividly remember the first time when I was in that theater, when the old people jump off the cliff and I like the whole audience was like, oh, holy shit. Like it was an unreal watch.
What is the uncomfiest scene in Midsommar?
The sex.
It probably. I think there are some honorable mentions. The old guy jumping off the cliff and then them putting him out of his misery.
Mm-hmm.
I think another one is Eyebrows becoming a bird. Like he's basically opened up.
Yeah.
And then one of their buddies getting just whacked in the library. And it was the only dark scene in the movie, but the way he dies, the noises, it's really disturbing.
I'm surprised. One of the ones that sticks with me is actually just like the image of the suicide from the opening of the film. Like duct taped hose on the mouth is just vile. And so it makes me scared. And that brings me to, I mean, we've brought up a lot of uncomfortable sounds and images in this movie. Is this like the all-time worst movie to watch when you're like wasted or under the influence at all?
Oh my gosh, it has to be. What a horrible trip.
So I don't want to say who to expose them, but one of our good friends watched this for their first time while they were completely stoned. And they said they got to the point where the camera like flips upside down when they're driving and it like made him too sick to his stomach and he just ran out of the room and he was freaking out because of the gas mask scene and everything. And he was like, I don't know if I can ever watch this movie again.
Yeah, a very understandable response. I mean, it's an uncomfortable movie to watch sober. It's a bad trip sober.
And like I'm imagining that like the flowers and like everything breathing like it does in this movie when you're under the influence would be super disorienting and weird.
Gosh. Dude, talk about worst luck in a movie ever. They show up to this campground in Sweden on like the 87th anniversary where they do this ritual every like 80 something years. What a bad beat.
What a horrible beat. Is there an alternate universe where they come on year 86 and like
have a great time?
Yeah, they write their thesis, they pass through grad school, everything's good.
I think so. I think that's a better movie. Who directs it? Adam Sandler?
No, it's a feel good thing. It's got to be like a Chris Columbus story.
Okay.
Spielberg.
Speaking of this weird campground, is there a U.S. equivalent to this site in Sweden in Midsommar?
So I threw this question in the pod outline with something very different in mind, and I think you nailed your answer. I want you to give that.
I think it's Lollapalooza.
When I read that, I swear to God, I laughed out loud for 5 minutes and then called Morgan into the room to read it with me, and she also laughed out loud for 5 minutes. It's a great comp.
I almost didn't put it in because I wanted to save it as like a silver bullet. I thought it was going to be great.
What I was trying to get at with this question is like, is there a movie equivalent for the U.S. that this does for Sweden? And my choice there is Elephant. It's a Gus Van Sant movie about Columbine. I think that does like this. I don't know if you know this. Swedish tourism dropped by like a ton after this movie came out.
I'm not surprised. Imagine, oh man, I picked the wrong year to come here.
Yeah, so I would imagine that some movie like that, or like The Fallout, like I feel like that's the biggest like U.S. thing that would scare tourists off right now. I don't know. Do you have anything else to say about Midsommar?
I think Ari Aster is a complete asshole for admitting that he wrote this for his ex-girlfriend, or like wrote it after a breakup. I think that is a total dick move. Like, hey, check this movie out and see what it did to me.
Restraining order.
Yeah, very uncomfy. I feel horrible for whoever broke up with him, but that has got to be the lamest thing ever to say publicly.
Yeah, it is. And viewing it as a breakup movie like actually does make it a little worse, I think.
Oh, you think so? I think that's kind of the point, isn't it?
I don't know. I like it less as a breakup movie and more as a independence story.
I understand.
Or like finding a place where you belong. Like, do you think Florence Pugh in this movie stays at the commune for like the next 70 years?
Yes, I do.
I agree.
Gosh, what a weird movie. That put her on the map, though. That had to have been the big break. Or was it Little Women? Which came first?
Ooh, it was Little Women came first. That was 2016. But I don't know if she had like that big of a following back then. I think this was like the one that made her an A-lister.
Yeah, sure. Little Women was like her debut. Her, you know, batted like 450 game one, and then a couple years later wins a World Series, and now she's, you know, playing for the Yankees for $100 million.
Quick interruption to the pod here. So I saw I got a text from Lem, and we've been FaceTiming to watch the games lately every Sunday, and I got a text from him, so I figured it was gonna be like, hey, we still on for noon or something. The text was, Saltburn any good?
Oh god. Make him watch it. Make him watch it. Tell him I said to watch it.
Will do. All right, let's jump into Candyman. This is by far my favorite. Oh wait, quick. Midsommar Tat. What would you get?
The bear.
It's a good choice. I think the house is also a good choice, like the triangle thing. But mine would be the rune. Like the,
oh, yeah. Cool.
Either way, cool. All right, Candyman. Talk me through your first watch on like Friday.
Yeah, I was it was a down day for work. Didn't have much to do, so while I was doing my busy work, I had it on my second monitor. And first like 10-15 minutes, I figured I would just have it on as background noise so that I was prepped for the pod. Immediately got glued to the screen after that opening scene, and was just floored and enamored. I cannot believe this isn't a bigger and more talked about movie. I think that it deserves to be more than a cult classic. I think, again, similar to The Ritual, this is one of my favorite horror movies now.
Wow. Oh my God, dude. It's warm in my heart to hear that. The first time I watched this one was also with my dad. I think I was like 18, probably. This was maybe a COVID discovery for me. And God, I just fell in love with it immediately. I think you know that this movie and its requel mean a lot to me, because I am just ultra fascinated with urban legends. Once again, Jack, if you want to make a clip of this, I have my photography series up here, where for my like big project in my senior photography class, I visited 4 urban legend sites around Illinois and took pictures there at like between midnight and 3 a.m. To try and capture the true spirit of these legends. And I think that Candyman really showed me how important urban legends are as just a way like to see where our culture is, I guess. Like urban legends of today, 100 years from now, or 1,000 years from now even, are going to be looked at the same way we look at ancient like Aesop fables and stuff like that. It's so fascinating to me that like this is modern oral folklore.
That's an interesting way to frame it. So like, what does Candyman mean to everyone in 100 years?
Yeah, it's. Are you asking legitimately?
No, I mean obviously you're not going to have the answer, but it's a neat concept.
It is. And like I said, urban legends. So cool. If you don't know any around your town or whatever, I encourage you to look into some history. Like, what was your most like terrifying urban legend growing up that you were so scared of?
I didn't have I didn't have like a folklore or any kind of scary thing. Did you have some kind of Oswego? Don't if there's something going on in Oswego, you gotta bury that.
You don't know about Cherry Road?
No. Dude.
Oh my God.
I'm already scared of the dark. You don't need to make me scared of my town.
No, okay. I gotta spout this story off. Because this is the first photo I took and the second most scared I was during this project. So the story goes, back in the day, a couple of kids were like heading home from prom, and Cherry Road is a road in Oswego that is a straight shot 55 mile an hour speed limit for a long time. And then at the very end, it slows down to 15 miles an hour for a sharp left turn. And the story goes that this couple had been like out partying and stuff, wasn't really paying attention, and they ended up getting in a car crash and eventually passing away. The girlfriend had died on impact of the car like flipping or whatever, but the boyfriend wrote "help" in his girlfriend's blood on the pavement. And supposedly it's like a top 10 haunted road in America.
Dude, you did not need to tell me that story.
It is so creepy. And teens now, to remember this story, will go out and spray paint "help" in red spray paint on this road, which I cannot confirm or deny I did for this urban legend project and produced a terrifying, terrifying photo.
What's wrong with you? I don't feel like I've ever seen that. Why did this story not? Why didn't you tell me about this?
I don't know. The other ones, Resurrection Cemetery, that's in Joliet. The University of Illinois English building is supposedly haunted. Went to Champaign-Urbana for that. And then the creepiest one was Moons Creek Cemetery, which is like dirt roads for 15 minutes after driving an hour into nowhere. And then you got to go out and hope you don't get hit by a flying hatchet by this ghost lady.
Can we get back to frame? Which Candyman do you like better, the original or the remake?
Original.
Sequel. Is it a sequel or a remake?
It's a requel.
Help define requel. I've never understood this concept. Like, how can it be both?
So it rehashes some of the original themes with a couple of characters. It's kind of like a legacy sequel.
Pretty much.
Like, have you seen Scream 5?
Yeah.
That's where the term requel comes from.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Legacy sequel.
Yes. And you should absolutely watch the new one. I saw it in theaters 4 times, I believe. It was another one that like really spoke to me. The stuff they do with shadow puppets in that movie is fucking awesome. Nia DaCosta, amazing director. Jordan Peele obviously was very involved in that making as well. And his hands are all over that.
Will I like it more than the original?
Yes.
All right. And this is one of those, like, I saw the original and wanted to fire up the new one like almost immediately. I feel like it's going to be a home run. Yaya as the lead. I mean, come on.
I'm begging you, please wait and watch this one with me.
Okay, deal.
Cool.
Deal.
Is Tony Todd one of the most underrated actors of all time?
No. I don't think he's underrated. I'd say he's been underutilized. He's a clear talent, but I think we're forgetting about a lot of like weird Tony Todd projects the last like 10 years. Like, go look at his filmography. He hasn't really done a whole lot outside of Candyman, and he's had some good like voice acting. He's in 24. He's one of the bad guys. He's in The Rock, but like, I don't know if there's enough to say he's underrated. I think he's properly rated.
I wish that he did more voice acting work, because his voice in this especially is haunting.
So cool.
It is so good. So cool. And that brings me to, real quick, best tat from the movie. What would you get?
The hook.
Okay, cool. I did the quote, "I am the writing on the wall, the whisper in the classroom. Without these things, I am nothing."
The fuck is wrong with you?
That is, dude, it's such a cool quote. Come on.
What, you're going to start haunting people?
Oh my God. All right. Is this a top 5 Chicago movie of all time?
I think it cracks. Yeah, it cracks my list. I'd go The Untouchables, The Fugitive, Backdraft, Ferris Bueller, and then Candyman.
Interesting. I like that list a lot. Untouchables is a great addition. I've never seen that, actually, so it didn't make my list.
It's so good. You got to see it.
But my top five, in no particular order, Adventures in Babysitting, Blues Brothers, Ferris Bueller, Candyman, and, of course, the iconic lower whacker of The Dark Knight.
Does that count?
Oh, yeah.
It's not actually Chicago. It's Gotham.
But it's Chicago.
All right, fine.
Dude, you literally can't have Dark Knight without lower whacker.
I visit Chicago sometimes, and I'm convinced I'm in Gotham.
Yeah, exactly. crime rules this city. I will say it's interesting. I thought about putting Chicago on this list, like the movie from the 30s, but I just fucking hated it. So,
what about like 8 Men Out?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a reason it's not on my list. It takes place in Chicago, I guess.
There you go. I think we've both got pretty good lists. The Fugitive is a great addition too for yours.
So good, and we never talk about it. Whatever happened to Tommy Lee Jones? Did he just become an old fart?
Yeah, last thing I think I saw him in was Ad Astra.
Oh my gosh, wow, that's right, I forgot he pops up there. I want to say No Country. I don't know,
2012, or no, I think that was 07.
It's been a while, so
he must just be too old to get work now. All right, folk horror overview. Let's talk through some of these movies. I want to start this off with a folk horror draft. We are planning on doing a draft and a checklist for all of these little subgenres we have here. Ty, do you want first pick or second?
I'll go second.
Okay. At the number one, then, I am going to take Blair Witch.
As in Blair Witch Project?
Yes.
I shouldn't even declared. I should have made you stick with like the 2016 horrible sequel. All right. My first pick is my favorite horror movie of all time. Give me Hereditary. I know it's not even on your radar, but it deserves to be taken in the first round. So second round pick, I'm going to go Candyman. I think this movie is really good, and it is my favorite of the three movies we talked about today.
Okay. Are we allowing picks from the selections then?
I would hope so.
Cool. Okay. Then with my second, I'm going to go with The Ritual. I think it really is great. And with my third, I'm going to go... do I play this popular or go cult?
Do your thing.
I'll go with Anya Taylor-Joy in The Vavitch, The Witch.
Okay. And that's the popular pick?
Yeah.
All right. I cannot believe you took Blair Witch Project. That really threw me for a loop. Why did you take that? You don't even like that movie.
No, I do.
Really?
Yeah, it's fun.
I'll go Sleepy Hollow.
Cool.
And then this is my chalk pick. I still get the turn, right?
This is your second pick though, so
Midsommar.
Cool. Okay. Little Ari Aster fan club over there. Yeah. I'm glad I get the two that I really wanted here. I'm going with the original Wicker Man starring Christopher Lee.
Okay.
It's a great, great movie. If you haven't seen it, you should actually check it out. And my second, I'm going to go with the one that I was teetering on last time. And that is The Mothman Prophecies.
I've never seen that.
Oh, dude, it's good. You should watch it. Well, it's good for like the first 45 minutes.
Okay. Very hard movie to watch, and I'm not even sure this counts, but have you ever seen Bone Tomahawk?
Yeah, once a long time ago.
That's going to be my five spot. I think that's like a sneaky like 12 point a week kind of guy. I think the movie's better than people think, but it's become a popular TikTok movie.
Interesting. So in recap, I got Blair Witch, The Ritual, The Witch, The Wicker Man from 1973, and Mothman Prophecies.
I got Hereditary, Candyman, Midsummer, Sleepy Hollow, and Bone Tomahawk.
A couple of ones on my list that we didn't take. I don't know if would Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2 count?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I forgot about those completely.
I would have taken them. I think of them more as zombie movies than like folk.
I mean, yeah, it's a reason it didn't like. What does Evil Dead, does it fall under any of our categories this month?
I don't know. We could always do a wild card episode on Evil Dead 2. It's a lot better than Evil Dead.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah. It's Evil Dead with a budget.
Uh-huh. Also on my list, Piwacket. I don't know if you've ever seen that. 2018, pretty small indie film. Really, really great. Kwaidan, 1960s Japanese film, exploring urban legends from Japan. Very cool. Onibaba, which is a 1940s Japanese movie, I believe, about the like this mother and daughter who impersonate a Japanese demon to rob a lost samurai. And Mandy, which is the Nick Cage movie.
I was surprised that didn't end up on your list.
Yeah, it's good, but not that good for me.
Waiver wire pickup. All right, mm-hmm. I have to ask, is folk horror the best type of horror?
It's an interesting question because the answer is probably, but it's not my favorite type. I think that, like, if there were more folk horror movies that were on the same level as Candyman, as The Ritual, as Blair Witch, stuff like that, then this would absolutely be like the most popular and the chalk pick for the best horror subgenre. But because the selections are kind of few and far between, like I'm reaching back into the 70s for my draft. I don't know. Like this genre is kind of dying a little bit, it feels like.
I think at the peak of its powers, it is the best. Like at the top of its game, folk is the best, but you have so many other categories with so much more volume. Like slasher mm-hmm. is probably the right pick, I would think.
That's my favorite pick.
Yeah, so maybe not the best. I think folk is going to become my best if I see like one more banger.
I'll tell you what, you, I think, would really, really like, what's it called? Wicker Man from 73. Like, okay. Actually.
Not the Nick Cage version, you sure?
No, not the Nick. The bees! My oh, God! no, not the Nick Cage version. The Christopher Lee one is genuinely eerie. It's kind of like Midsummer, but has nighttime, and there is like a mystery at the center of it that drives the plot forward. It's pretty cool.
Good to know. All right, so give me your folk horror checklist. What makes a great folk horror movie for you?
I think these ones are pretty simple. I've only got three things today. I want an investigation of a myth or a legend or something, and is this legend real, and is that legend like terrorizing us? Number two, I need someone in a completely unfamiliar place and situation. And number three, I need it to be constantly eerie and with almost no jump scares.
I like that a lot. My first on my checklist is less is more, and that means not just with a creature, but scares. I like when it's more methodical, less jump scares, less scares in general, just eeriness. I think you need a tragic backstory for a main character. I think of The Ritual. I think of Midsummer. You need that to drive the plot forward, in my opinion. And then no spoon feeding the concept or the actual like mythology of the lore. I want like as an audience member to start piecing things together. Like I started to piece together The Ritual and what the creature was about. And I didn't need like a couple lines of dialogue to drive it home. I'd love to like do my own homework or watch it again.
I just can't fucking wait to watch Candyman 2 with you.
All right. I'm on standby. I feel like I'm going to love it. It's fastball.
You will. I also, it's my favorite vinyl I own. It's so fucking sick. I will show that off as well.
Before we jump, since you had a quick break in the action, I also have one. I am petrified because I'm still waiting to hear about Joe Mixon. Because I have Cam Akers just lurking on my bench. And I'd prefer to play Cam Akers if Mixon is down, instead of old man Keenan Allen. if I had to choose between the two, who would you go? Oh, Mixon's out.
Oh, there you go.
I think Cam Akers is the right pick.
I like Cam Akers. I still believe in him.
I do too. You know who I still believe in that will never see the playing field ever again? James Robinson. Shout out 2020 James Robinson.
Boy, oh boy. Also, before we head out, I did want to ask, in Midsummer, is Eyebrows like a top five asshole of all time?
Yeah, he's up there with Justin Long and Barbarian. It's not even close.
Okay. My list here, I have Nick Holt in the Menu. Oh. The kid from Better Watch Out, which I don't know if you've seen. Professor Umbridge from Harry Potter 5. She's a fucking awful. The guy from The Green Mile that like tortures him. Yep.
That gets me so mad. Percy.
Yes. And the religious girl from The Mist.
What about the girl from Midnight Mass? Like the...
She's up there, dude.
Cruel.
Yes. But if Eyebrows doesn't make it, he's at least like top 10.
The nurse in One Flew Under the Cuckoo's Nest, I think, is also Ratched, in the conversation.
Yeah, Nurse Ratched. It's a good take. All right. You got anything else for us?
Can't wait for Candyman.
Yeah, dude. It's going to be great. All right. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Blast Podcast. If you haven't downloaded our app, please go to the App Store and search Blast Movie App and download. Also, feel free to leave us a positive review. We would really appreciate it. If you can't find it on the App Store, you can also head to our website, www.blastmovies.net, and we do have a link to download it there. In the meantime, please come back to the pod. We really enjoy having you around here. And you can catch clips and bonus content on our TikTok and Instagram. Our TikTok is at blast.movies and our Instagram at blast_movies_. And we will catch you next week with found footage horror movies. And I believe Joker Fully Adieu. Is that next week?
I think so. I think it's time.
Nice. All right. We will see you guys around.